Hello and welcome to the show, everyone. Wow, I take a few days off and there's cocaine in the White House and Bud Light's got another commercial. My goodness, what is the world coming to? That is the question. We're going to talk about all of this. I think ESG is to blame. Thank you very much. It's the reason why Disney's having problems. It's the reason why Bud Light has had the problems it's had. It's the reason why, you know what, he wants to eat Ben and Jerry's these days. Anyway, it is a big problem. We're going to talk all about it with the former CEO of Carl's Jr. He knows a thing or two, shall we say. Mr. Andy Putzter, he is going to be here to talk about branding. He's also going to give us his insight into whether or not Bidenomics is working. Spoiler alert, it's not. It's not. He's right there. Thank you for being here, Andy. I'm going to get right to you in a second. We want to point out that portions of the show are brought to you by LegacyPMInvestments.com. Give them a ring, 1-866-589-0560. If you're worried about inflation, if you want to look at diversifying your investment portfolio, LegacyPMInvestments.com. We will be talking about that again a little bit coming up. But without further ado, I want to introduce my friend, who is the former CEO, as I said, of Carl's Jr. as well as Hardee's. So what, 17 years, Andy? You were at those places?
Years,
so you know, yeah. You spent a lot of time. You know how it's done, shall we say. Well, I want to just share with you this little commercial that just aired for Bud Light. It's about 15 seconds here, and it's really kind of meaningless. But we'll talk about why it's so offensive to so many people. Take a listen, Andy. Okay, so there's this like NFL star and he sits down, he grunts, and then a whole bunch of other guys, they sit down and they grunt for a good old 15 seconds of just easy to drink at the end is the tagline amid all that grunting. And it just leaves us sort of, I guess, asking why. I mean, I don't think they know what to do right now. Can't blame.
Yeah, well, I think they actually finally figured out who they're selling beer to. They're not selling beer to the liberals, the progressives in San Francisco, New York, and Los Angeles. They're selling beer to guys who like sports. Now, that I don't think those ads are anything that would appeal to guys who like sports. I think they're just trying to say, look, okay, we screwed up. We know who we're actually selling to. This is our target market. Maybe we're being refocused, but it's not a good ad. If you wanted a good ad, you would advertise. You do an ad with things that people like. The people in the ad would like to see. You know, in the old days, you might find something patriotic. Remember, they used to have the Clydesdales and the flag come out at Super Bowl events, or they'd have attractive young ladies in their ads, things that these people would actually be interested in. But I don't think anybody's interested in these guys sitting in lawn chairs and grunting.
But you see what they're trying to do here, right? They're trying to say, oh, wait, yes. No, we get you, you guys. And I'm sorry, but like after everything that's happened, I think people really feel like it's pretty darn disingenuous. Look, you were the CEO of Carl's Jr., Hardee's for 17 years. Is that right? Do I have that right?
Yeah.
It was a long time. So, you know, you dealt with branding and marketing, and I remember watching your commercials. What is it that was sort of, I mean, I'm guessing you kind of knew your customer, right? And you wanted to keep that customer loyal. What is it that kind of went wrong here? Like what exactly would you say happened? Because as the CEO wants us to know, it's just one commercial, just one influencer, just one time.
Well, the problem is you spend years trying to build up a brand. You try and create an image because you want people to feel like your product is something that they associate with their lifestyle, with it's something they identify with. It's like Corvettes, you know, the great American sports car. People that drive Corvettes feel good about that. If you drive a Ferrari or a Mercedes or whatever car you're driving, you want to feel like it's part of you. And once you walk away from that, once you cheapen it or you divert attention to something else, you really lose that brand image, and it's very, very hard to get it back. And they're not going to get it back by a bunch of guys grunting and sitting in lawn chairs. They need the CEO of that company needs to say, look, we made a mistake. This is the mistake. We really shouldn't have done this. This isn't who we are as a brand. They need to walk away from it. And they seem very, very reluctant to do that. And until they do it, they're going to be instead of the first most popular beer brand in the United States, they'll continue to be the 15th most popular, or whatever number they're at now.
Yeah, I mean that's what's so sort of shocking to me, is how quickly you can just ruin it all overnight. And you know, we've been looking at the stock price. I'm just like, wow. I mean, to lose $27 billion like this, it's absolutely incredible. And it's like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Because by the way, Dylan Mulvaney, who made the commercial in the first place, I'm sure Dylan Mulvaney did not anticipate this kind of backlash, because the thing just went viral. It took off. And now Dylan's like, hey, you know, you guys are really, you know, not protecting me. So now the LGBTQ community is like, we're not drinking Bud Light. We don't want anything to do. And it's spreading, I think, as we look at these new numbers that are coming in, the sales are just declining overall from one company to another. So do you think Budweiser or AB InBev, which by the way, is not the American company everybody thinks of it. I think that's like kind of a misnomer now. They were sold back in, I think, 2008, was it, Andy, to the Brazilian beer company. And there was like a, you know, overseas European beer company and the Brazilian one that merged, and they took the name Bud because it was a great brand with the Clydesdales and very American beer. And they squandered that, if you ask me, because, you know, $27 billion lost like that is a big deal. I'm angry if I'm a shareholder.
Well, you know, they were in St. Louis. They were in St. Louis for many, many years. And I think they were in touch with middle America. They were in touch with the people who were buying their products. Now, even if you got the entire LGBTQ community to start buying beer, I don't think it would have come anywhere near the sales numbers that they had previously when they appealed to a broader audience. So when they moved, they actually moved the headquarters to New York, which is kind of a bubble. You know, if you're in New York, you're in this bubble. It's the same thing in Washington, D.C., same thing in San Francisco. You're in this kind of leftist bubble. And I think they thought, they honestly believed, the woman who came up with this ad thought this would be appealing generally to Americans, that the world has changed. It was now consistent with her values. And this would be something that everybody accepted, because she was grossly out of touch with the with the people who are buying their product. And when you get out of touch with the people that are buying your product, you can make mistakes like this. Look at Disney. I mean, you've got a brand that survived by appealing to families. You know, you want your, this is a place you could bring your kids, right?
Yeah.
And then they come out with all of this leftist baloney that really alienated American families, particularly from the heart of America, from the Midwest, the Southeast, the South. They alienated these individuals, and now they're not going to Disney, and they're wondering why. They're wondering why.
It's true. And you wonder, you just tweeted this. Did you not? I mean, you just had a tweet on this today, and you've written on this. It's like they just don't understand who their audience is anymore. I thought with Bob Iger coming back into the seat, and I know Bob is liberal, but he's less liberal than the other Bob. And I know Iger. I've interviewed him many times over the years, and he's a realist. So I thought, all right, you know, maybe this is what the company needs. But it's like, it just, I don't know. Like, did that ship sail? I mean, I'm not saying Disney's going away, but they got some work to do. And it's very hard, wouldn't you agree, to appease everyone right now? And I do think there's kind of a bullying that's coming from the left. And this LGBTQ thing is just huge. And it's like, you're either with us or against us. You know, I think a lot of Americans are like, you know, live and let live, right? You do your thing, I'll do mine. Just don't force feed it to me. Don't make me drink it with Bud Light.
Yeah.
And don't inflict it on my kids. And I don't know if Disney can manage that. I thought this Bob might be better than the other, but what do you think?
I think it's very, once you make that swing, once you go far one way or the other way, it's very difficult to come back, because you will offend somebody. You were offending nobody. If you were neutral, right? Nobody was offended. Then you swang to the left or to the right, and to swing back, you're going to offend whatever group you were initially trying to please. So now they've gotten themselves into these really terrible positions. It's going to be very, very difficult to get out of it. But I think they, you know, if you have a strong CEO who understands what needs to be done with the company, wants to rebuild the business, is going to have to come in and make the kind of changes that need to be made. I don't think the current management team can make those changes, because they've already committed themselves.
At Disney, you think Bob Iger's gone eventually?
And I don't think any of these Target, Disney, Anheuser-Busch. I really don't think that the current management teams can convince consumers that they changed. I think they need new management teams to come in and say, look, we understand what the other guys did. It was a mistake. We're neutral. We're just trying to appeal to our customers. We just want to make a profit. We're not trying to change the world along with some, you know, leftist progressive agenda. We're actually just trying to keep our parks open or sell our beer. And when they do that, I think they'll start to see some change, but not until that happens.
And I think that that's actually going to be pretty critical and pretty crucial. I just want to go out to the viewers for a quick moment, and then we can resume this idea of management change, because people are very polite on Wall Street. Nobody wants to talk about this. You know, the analyst community, we can get into that, because it took them like 3-4 weeks to even publish a report saying, hey, you know, maybe this is a hold. Not a sell, just a hold. If you listen to Wall Street, you'll lose money. My gosh. Anyway, all the viewers are big fans of Carl's Jr.'s and big fans of you. I want to thank them all for being here. I see a lot of familiar faces. Michael Donald, yes, we have hit 80,000 subs, which is pretty remarkable, because we just started doing this show live. I don't know. What do you think, guys? Like 2.5 months ago? So 80,000, yeah. It's great. We're growing every single day, and it's thanks to all your help. One of you recommending that everybody hit that like button and share the video to smash it for me. I would so appreciate it. Again, we're so happy to have my friend Andy here today, because he has this expertise. 17 years, everyone, as the CEO of Carl's Jr. and Hardee's. Was it CKE Restaurants, right? And you had a number of different brands. Did you have different sort of demos then that you were targeting, and you just understood, okay, we market to this group for this brand, we market to this group for that brand?
No, I actually tried to bring Hardee's and Carl's Jr. together to be a single brand, so that and people across the country started to regard them that way. That way we could advertise nationally. Now we couldn't change the names. This was kind of a problem. You couldn't call Hardee's Carl's Jr. in Raleigh, North Carolina, and you couldn't call Carl's Jr. Hardee's in Los Angeles. These brands had you know, decades of brand building done, billions of dollars spent building up those names. So we tried to actually just have the same products, the same advertising, the buildings looked the same, and people began to understand that they really were the same brands. But we had made a decision to market to what we called young, hungry guys. It was 18 to 34-year-old males who bought about over 50% of the burgers that were sold in the United States were sold to this young, hungry guy demographic. So we decided, hey, nobody else is marketing to this demographic. This is something we should try and do. We did so aggressively with both brands and really took the company from bankruptcy. It was basically bankrupt when I took over. We were in, that's why they put a lawyer in charge of it. I think they said, let's see if the cocky lawyer can fix this.
That's right. And everybody should know, Andy is a lawyer by background. He, by the way, and we'll get into the economy and all that stuff with you, because you're also just one of the most brilliant economic policy thinkers I've encountered. But Andy has a legal background, so that's interesting. Yeah, they came in and they put a lawyer in charge because you guys were facing bankruptcy. Question for you. I don't know how familiar you are with Mr. Beast or the Mr. Beast Burger, but Mr. Beast, of course, big internet star, like the most internet. So my little 80,000, like that's kind of a joke, right? Like that's how he's like 80 million or something insane. Forgive me. It's probably even higher than that. Anyway, so he's like the biggest YouTube star out there, and he has licensed effectively his name to have the Beast Burger, the Mr. Beast Burger. And these, franchises, I guess, are doing pretty darn well, pretty smart business. You said you were after that younger male demographic. It sounds like he's kind of trying to do a repeat of what you were doing there at Carl's Jr. and Hardee's.
Yeah, I think he'll do real well with it too, as long as he just needs to make sure that somebody's watching the shop. You know, you can have a name, you can have great advertising, people come in the restaurants, but if you don't have good food, clean restaurants, and good service, they won't come back. And he needs to make sure whoever's using his name is being very, very careful with it and doing what needs to be done at the restaurant level, which is true in any retail business. You know, you really have to take care of the customers, and you can have the greatest advertising in the world, but if you're not producing consistent with that, you will lose your business.
You know, we had the former vice chairman of Target on the program just the other day, and he was making the point that when he was at Target, things like the cleanliness of the store, the aisles, all of this stuff really mattered. He was sort of saying, look, Target really screwed up. with its Pride Month and the Tuckett swimsuits and the designer that I guess also sold Satan-inspired worshiping clothing as well. Like, you know, people are out there saying, and they think it's a conspiracy theory, hey, they're going after our kids. And then suddenly Target has the Satan-worshipping designer designing the stuff for the kids, and parents are like, okay, enough is enough. Like he said, I'm really shocked because it strikes me as a management failure on so many levels. They have too many bargain deals, sales deals, buy one, get one free kind of things going on. We didn't do that in my day. The aisles are getting messy. They're getting clunky. They haven't been managing their inventory well. And then along comes Pride Month and they're doing that. Do you think these companies' CEOs will be fired, whether it is Target, whether it is AB InBev, ticker symbol Bud, or whether eventually it becomes Bob Iger at Disney? Will shareholders hold them responsible?
Well, you know, the problem is that you have these boards of directors, which over the past 10, 15 years, they've been hiring people based upon their based on what they are, not who they are. In other words, they're hiring people based on race or sex. They're not, or political affiliation. They're not hiring people who based upon their qualifications, merit, and character to put on many of these boards. And so you have boards that you may see these ads, these mistakes, these misdirections that they're taking, maybe because of the people that are on the board of directors. They may not be sending the company in the right direction. I think often shareholders don't know who they're voting for. You know, they often vote along with management's recommendation. But I think people need to be more careful. I think these boards need to understand they have a fiduciary duty to their shareholders, not to advance a political agenda, but to generate returns for those investors, to see the share prices go up. And if they're acting consistent with their fiduciary duties, you wouldn't take a brand like Target, which depends on families, right? It depends on families to survive and do this and engage in this kind of activity. And in addition to the, you know, the aisles are dirty, there's too much discounting, so they're lowering their profits. They're not hiring the right people. They're not being careful in their hiring as far as the qualifications of people they bring in or their training. There could be a lot of operational mistakes, but you make a huge mistake, like alienating the people you count on to buy your products. You're going to see this kind of result. And I think the board of directors should act accordingly.
Okay, but let's be realistic. There's this little thing called ESG. And if anybody doesn't know what that is, listen up really quickly right now, because it's called environmental social governance. And I know your eyes are just glazing over, right? But that, I think they do that intentionally. They want your eyes to glaze over. But the idea behind ESG, and BlackRock has been such a big proponent of it, run by Larry Fink, huge, huge asset management company, largest in the world. And as a result, they have a lot of say. And if they buy or don't buy your stock, it's kind of a big deal. So all of these companies want to make sure that Larry's happy, that the ESG woke police are happy. And part of it means you got to have a certain diversity on your board. You've got to do a certain number of things for Pride Month. You got to do this, that, and the other. And I just question, I mean, this wasn't really in action, let's face it, I don't think, right back in 2017 when you left as CEO of CKE Restaurants, Carl's Jr., Hardee's. Were you starting to feel this pressure, or is this much more in recent years? Because I think it's taking brands so far away from what they need to do.
No, it definitely is in recent years. It actually started around the time I left. I wasn't even familiar with it until a couple years later. I started actively going out and speaking against ESG back in 2020 with a couple other guys. There was Steve Sukup and Vivek Ramaswamy. We were kind of the three guys out there saying, Vivek, this is terrible.
Vivek, yeah, who, by the way, also just on the program recently, fantastic, and he's doing great in polls.
He's a good friend and a wonderful guy. I think he's got a great future politically. I don't think this is his year, but I think he's getting his name out there. But in any event, you were right. You know, and I'd mention ESG if I were talking about socialism and capitalism. I speak to college audiences regularly, and I'd bring up ESG. And you're right, everybody's eyes glaze over. You couldn't fill the men's room with people who wanted to hear about ESG. And that, but about a year ago, in August of last year, in August of 2022, the room started to fill up when we would. As a matter of fact, we were at Vivek and I were at an ALEC meeting in Atlanta, and we had been on it. Steve Moore and Vivek and I were on a panel talking about the economy. And then afterwards, there was a separate panel talking about ESG that neither of us were on, but we wanted to go. So we knew everybody on the panel. Yeah. We wanted to go see it. And we ended up having to stand to the on the side and listen because the room was full of state legislators. These are not, you know, this is an ALEC meeting. They're a state legislative body. And they had to put cameras outside, televisions outside, so people could see this panel on ESG. And since then, you've really seen a reaction. People are starting to understand that ESG is, it's really, like you said, it's a ruse. You know, environmental, social, and governance, just how innocent does that sound? But it's a ruse to hide from you the fact that this is a means by which these large corporate executives like Larry Fink attempt to use the American private sector as a means to implement a progressive agenda and go around as a shortcut around the ballot box because they can use their voting power because they have such tremendous voting power with all of the money that they manage for various pension funds and wealth funds and
colleges. And so what does it wind up doing to those individual shareholders? You have only to look at what happened. I mean, Target, by the way, some of these companies, we're here live in real time and the market's doing well today. So they're seeing a little teeny bit of a recovery, but I'm sorry, like they're way off where they were. It's still somewhere around a $27 billion loss at AB InBev. And I'm just like, you know, at some point, somebody has to hold them accountable. I realize Larry Fink and BlackRock have a ton of power, but at some point, states have to say, wait a second, I don't think I want you running my pension fund for my firefighters or my teachers, because guess what? They need to have something to retire on. And if you guys keep losing money because you're going to keep losing sales because America's not with you on this, don't the chickens come home to roost at some point for the likes of these ESG giants?
Well, yes, it is. Number one, a good rule to remember, and I think everybody on the program will understand this, and I know every CEO knows it. Companies that focus on profits will be more profitable than companies that don't. That, you know, that,
yeah.
I mean, it's as simple a rule as you possibly could come up with. If you're, it's hard enough to make a profit when you focus on it, let alone when you're focused on trying to change the world pursuant to some progressive leftist agenda on the climate and on DEI and all this other baloney, number one. Number two, a number of states, I've been working with the Heritage, I'm a senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Heritage Foundation and ALEC have been working, the American Legislative Exchange Council. We've been working together. We came up with model legislation this year for states to pass, saying that investment managers who invest on funds on behalf of these states could not invest pursuant to ideological objectives, pursuant to ESG objectives. And 20% of the states in this country, 10 states, passed that bill this past year, or a version of that bill. And we expect to get much higher. Those states have about $500 billion invested with these large management firms. And that is having an impact. I don't know, it may have been while you're on vacation, but like last week or so, Larry Fink came out and said, I don't even want to talk about ESG anymore. I don't want anything to do with it. He said that the right is wrong because people on the right are wrong because we should do good stuff. People on the left are wrong because they don't understand this isn't my money. I can't do this. This isn't our money. Now, this is the guy who was the poster CEO for ESG. I mean, he wanted to change the climate. He wanted everybody to hire based on race and sex. Nobody looking to qualifications, merit or character. He was the lead guy on this, and he's now backed off. The CEO of Vanguard has also backed off and acknowledged that ESG wouldn't produce superior returns. So we're starting to see a backlash. It's a little different. There's really kind of two issues. One is this woke capitalism thing, which is Disney, Target, Anheuser-Busch. The other side of that is where the people that own the shares in your company are coming down on management, trying to get them to pursue these goals. So you're really seeing pressure for consumers on the woke capitalism side, and pressure from states and political pressure from Republicans on these large financial firms who are using their investment power to achieve non-financial goals. Yeah. So we're starting to see a little bit of a turn. We haven't won this war. We are a long way from winning this. We've been fighting it ever since. What year did Das Kapital come out? When Karl Marx started all of this. Collectivist, socialist insanity, and we'll continue to fight it. But we are making grounds on ESG.
All right. So I want to turn to the overall economy right now, because, by the way, I think ESG has hurt these businesses. I think this idea that somehow you have to have every Tom, Dick, Harry, Sally, Susan, Cindy that has a myriad of colors and all of this. Like, look, I'll just say this. One, I'm a big believer in diversity, in that having people with different backgrounds helps form different ideas, right? So in that sense, it's very good. But then you can't have somebody in a job just because of the color of their skin. Like, they still have to perform. It's what the Supreme Court, by the way, just decided recently with why you can't have affirmative action. It's just not fair. And I think of America as the kind of place where you should be able to get ahead no matter the color of your skin. And that means we're not going to penalize someone because they're Asian or they're white or they're this, that, or the other. And we're not going to reward you just because you happen to be Black or Hispanic or this, that, or the other. So with that in mind, do we need kind of an affirmative action sort of Supreme Court ruling for, you know, corporate America to feel like it can breathe and just say we want the best possible people regardless of the color of their skin?
Well, as you know, the decision against the universities the Supreme Court just came out with was based on the Civil Rights Act of 1964, mm-hmm. which said that if you were a government or a government-related entity, you couldn't make decisions based on race, religion, or other specific classifications. So the courts now said universities, which are getting federal money, can't do that. There also mm-hmm. is a provision, and Justice Alito mentioned this in his dissent. There's also a provision in the Civil Rights Act that says if you have 15 or more employees, you can't make decisions on that basis. Now, this case didn't involve a corporation, but it's pretty clear that the Supreme Court, if a case comes before them on this basis, will make the same kind of decision. You can't have these affirmative action programs. And I would say, well, I'm also very much in favor of diversity. When I was running CKE Restaurants, I emphasized from day one that nobody was to be promoted based on their race or their sex. Nobody was to keep their job. And over that 17-year period, when I left, we ended up with, I think it was 69% of our general managers in our restaurants were women and 70% were minorities. Now, we were in a sector where we would attract minorities. We would attract women because these general manager jobs are, you know, they're great for single moms, you know. And so we had a lot of minority single moms running restaurants. But it wasn't that way when I started. It became that way over time. And I think when you emphasize quality and merit and qualifications and character, you end up with a diverse workforce. The problem was in the old days that whites got a preference. And then now mm-hmm. since affirmative action, minorities got a preference. Well, if we get back to where nobody has a preference, I think we're going to find a workforce that reflects America. But it has to be a colorblind approach to this. And if it's colorblind, I don't think minorities underperform whites. I think they perform, you know, at least as well, if not better.
By the way, and to say so, you realize that is frankly pretty darn prejudiced in and of itself. I mean, if you don't believe that minorities have a shot at all, they can't. I mean, that to me is pretty awful. I do think that there are some challenges from a socioeconomic standpoint that need to be overcome. I think that there's, you know, the importance of family, community, church, school, all of these things, having two parents in a household. There's a lot of stuff that got messed up back in the 60s, and it's very hard to sort of recover from, and obviously messed up because, you know, the whole history of the country and slavery, et cetera. I'm not discounting that. But what I am saying is that, and Larry Elder talks about this a lot, another man who's running for president. Larry Elder has said, look, you know,
great guy.
African-American population was actually on a pretty good trajectory. And yet, like, somehow once, you know, welfare came along and you couldn't have a man in the house, it really destroyed that family unit, which set off a whole host of other economic challenges, which have led to many problems. And so the answer, if it were only as easy as just giving out a check, right? We know that money's not the solution. I think the public school system has proven that over and over again. You look at voucher schools and private schools that are trying to do a whole lot with very little. And it's not just, if it were as easy as, okay, we're going to give everybody reparations and then we wipe a clean slate and everybody's, it's not that easy. It's far more complicated and there's more work to be done. Speaking of which, Joe Biden has been trying to sell us on this Bidenomics idea over and over and over again. And I'm like, gosh, you guys just keep thinking if you repeat it enough that maybe it'll work. Take a listen to this one.
And guess what? Bidenomics is working.
Yeah, right. Like I said, you know what? You just keep telling yourself that and we'll see how it goes. I'll let you respond. I mean, I happen to think that Bidenomics has been like the biggest disaster in recent times, but you've been doing some research on this. You have an article in National Review. Walk us through it, Andy. Is Bidenomics working?
Well, it's not working at all. I mean, I think they had a video out recently that said, here's the truth. Here's the facts. Bidenomics is working. Inflation is down during the Biden-Harris administration, which isn't true. I mean, it was at 1.4% when Biden took office. It's now at 4%. Last year, it was 8.3%. So a truthful statement would be that the inflation rate's almost triple what it was when Biden took over. It's not down. So even, you know, I don't know why they lie in these videos. I don't know why they come out with these statements that are just blatantly false.
Well, now, because they think people are going to glaze over. It's like ESG, environmental social governance. As soon as you start talking about the economy, boring, the economy. I'm sorry, the economy is everything. This policy really matters. And Joe Biden thinks if he just can keep saying something like this, that it's going to be true. I'm sorry, it's a lie. We have inflation and we got to deal with it. I'm astonished at prices. I was visiting my hometown in New Hampshire recently and went to my favorite restaurant and I almost fell over. I mean, you know, I just couldn't believe the prices and they can't get people to work. That's the other problem, right? Like nobody wants to work.
Well, there are two things there. One is what they're trying to do and what they're trying to say, well, inflation was 9.1% last year in May. It's or 8.3% last year in May. This year, it's 4%. Well, in fact, that's the inflation rate. That both of those are increases. In other words, right, that's not inflation. Inflation over that two-year period was about 13% because inflation's like compound interest. It just keeps adding up. So when they say, well, we reduced it from 8.3 to 4, well, 4 is a high number. The Fed shoots for 2. So 4 is like double what the Federal Reserve is shooting for. So over 2 years, you have an increase of about 13%. So you're not, when you go into the stores, you're not saying, oh my God, thank God inflation was only up 4% this year. You're saying what cost me $100 2 years ago now cost me $113, which is the price that you're recognizing when you go into those stores. So they're trying to avoid responsibility for the great increase in inflation. At the same time, they're taking credit for the inflation rate coming down. But the inflation rate went up. And Larry Summers, you know, who was the Secretary of the Treasury under President Clinton, he was the head of the Council of Economic Advisors under President Obama. He was the president of Harvard University. This isn't some rightist conservative economist. This isn't, you know, Andy Pusger or Steve Moore or Art Laffer. This is a left guy. And he said when they passed the American Rescue Plan in March of 2021, month after Biden's in office, 2 months after he's in office, he said, if you do this, we'll see inflation like we haven't seen in a generation. Well, he was absolutely right. Biden's policies caused this inflationary surge. Now, the rate at which it's increasing has come down. Well, number one, because you're rolling over huge numbers. You know, if you had 8% inflation last year, it's hard to have 8% inflation this year. But even more importantly, the Fed Reserve is raising interest rates. They're trying to slow the economy to bring that rate down. It's not Biden policies that are slowing the rate of inflation increasing. It's the Federal Reserve. So they're trying to
take Biden policy actually would do the opposite, just to be clear. I mean, he wants to find a new way around the Supreme Court so he can forgive these $10,000 and $20,000 loans that people took out to go to college. That one really, I mean, it's unbelievable. It's like, you know, the poor kid who couldn't afford college and then became a plumber and is working hard to keep his business going now has to pay for the kid that went to college and, you know, majored in gender studies, no offense against gender studies, but, you know, and can't find a job. I mean, come on. And that's Biden once again trying to give these handouts. And handouts, frankly, to a group of people that ought to know better.
Well, no, but Jerome Powell's trying to slow the economy, right? He's trying to slow the economy, right? So inflation comes down. Because inflation is a regressive tax. Unlike our tax system, where the more you make, the more you pay. That's a progressive tax system. The more you make, the higher the tax rate, as you know. With inflation is a regressive tax. It hurts you more the poorer you are. The less you have, this tax hurts more. So Jerome Powell's trying to bring the inflation rate down by slowing the economy. What is Biden out there talking about? All he talks about is how his policies are growing the economy, which is in effect an admission by him that to the extent that what he's saying is true, and I'd even argue with that, but he's really arguing that his policies are designed to increase inflation and fighting Jerome Powell, who's trying to bring inflation down. So and by the way, you mentioned wages. They in the same video, they say under Biden and Harris, wages are up. Well, hourly wages were $11.39 an hour. And I don't know why they lie about this. It's Bureau of Labor Statistics number. Anybody can look this up. They were $11.39 an hour when he took office. They're $11.03 now. That's not up.
And by the way, when you account for inflation, is that it's even lower.
Adjusted. Inflation adjusted was $11.39, now is $11.03.
They're not looking at inflation adjusted numbers. They're not looking at real wages. That's why they're video. And they'll say, oh, we're not lying. But they are.
No. You watch this video. This video says, adjusted for inflation, wages are up. It's worse than you can possibly imagine. And they've got this video out there with very flashily done with Biden walking in the Rose Garden and just saying things that just are factually false that you can easily identify. It'd be like
but
Biden
the media won't call him out
at
on
the
it.
Top of his law school class, you know.
Oh my gosh. I get to play that just for fun today because I was looking at that recently. That happened when I was a kid in New Hampshire. He wound up getting kicked out of the race as a result because it was just so positively ridiculous. He also really showed off the sort of testy side of his personality, which I'm told still exists. In fact, there was a recent article just the other day about that. I guess staffers are really, they say he can really be have quite a foul mouth there. In the White House, you know, look, again, if the guy gets things done, I think America would forgive a lot, but he doesn't get stuff done. And the economy, I'm sorry, first and foremost, like this is the biggest deal. I have a sort of this is a question that I want to run by you, kind of just a big thought question. Look, they messed up, right? Because you had Biden spending every chance he could. You had Congress out there with their Inflation Reduction Act. That's another lie for you, just the wording of that one. You had the Fed forever just printing money up until quite recently, and now they're going to try and raise again as we go into next year. It'll be challenging for the economy. I'm not sure how this is all going to play out. They're really walking a tightrope here. But my question to you, Andy, is, you know, I go to the restaurant, prices are way up, yet the place is still packed and they can't find people to work. I mean, what is going on? How I get that, you know, inflation, once it starts to take off and it gets embedded in the economy, is very hard to fight. And yet, you know, if people aren't working, then how are they getting the money to go out to dinner?
Well, number one, many of the programs that we implemented during the pandemic in an effort, because people were told not to work, states shut down. So people needed money to survive. Many of those programs were supposed to end and they haven't ended. You may recall, you were very young, probably don't recall, maybe you call reading about it, but Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton had this program where if you got welfare, you had to work. There were work incentives connected with welfare. Those have mostly been removed. Kevin McCarthy got some of them back in place, but not all of them. So you still can get a ton of money from the government, number one. Number two, the savings rate, when President Trump left off, but President Trump before the pandemic under President Trump was about 8-9%. It went up to about 30-some percent. It was in the high 20s when Biden took office. It's now down to near historic lows. It's down like 3-4%. So people are still spending the money that they saved up during the pandemic. And then credit card charges are through the roof. I think we're at the highest consumer credit numbers we've ever seen coming out of the pandemic. And when Biden was elected, they were the lowest we'd ever seen because people had a bunch of money. They weren't using their credit cards. So you've got people are charging, they're spending their savings, and they're getting government benefits. So and you're also seeing increased wages for people who are working because you've got so few people willing to work. We're still way under the labor participation rate, which is another thing that makes everybody's eyes glaze over, but is really what drives the unemployment rate. And we're still way, way below where we were when the pandemic hit.
So is this why, not to get too political, but look, I think the economy is everything. I think people didn't quite realize that. I kept saying, like, pay attention to policy. Please pay attention to policy. Because it wasn't very clear what Joe Biden's policies were. I mean, he didn't talk policy. He didn't want to talk policy while campaigning. But you look at his numbers on the economy right now, and they are atrocious. You look at the newest poll data out, which shows Donald Trump beating him in if the race were held today, which is pretty interesting. I mean, we'll see. I think that if Trump is the nominee, the challenge he's going to have to overcome is just the onslaught, right, from the media that he got before and that he'll continue to get. So he has to make sure that he can actually reach people and not get fully shut down. But with all that in mind, like, do people vote their pocketbooks? I mean, they didn't, I don't think, it last time around. But things are now so bad that it might actually really be a problem for Biden come 24.
Well, it should be a real problem for him. And whether, you know, there is, Donald Trump really is not, he's not as this evil guy that the press portrays him to be. He's not perfect. He's like anybody else. But this is somebody who's been under relentless attack for 8-9 years now, just nonstop, trying to find anything they possibly can that this man does that's wrong. But as president, he was very effective. We had an incredibly strong economy. We now have an incredibly weak economy. And if you want to continue with America's weakness internationally, you want to continue with America's weakness domestically, economically, and if you want to continue with America's weakness at the border, allowing people in illegally in droves, then Joe Biden's your guy. And it is embarrassing, really, to see him on the international stage. It's embarrassing to see him speak publicly. It's embarrassing to watch these video clips, which initially were kind of funny, but now you really have to take them more seriously. There are real issues here with President Biden. I'm hopeful that whoever the nominee is for the Republican Party, and it certainly looks like it'll be Donald Trump, I'm certainly hope that we can bring a victory in 2024, because the country's future, our children's future, our grandchildren's futures depend on it. We can't have another 4 years like this. We just can't.
Yeah, I'm really worried about it. I really am. And the left will come back with, oh, well, democracy will be destroyed, et cetera. But that's their go-to move. And with that as their sort of ammunition, it gives them a tremendous amount of power, right? And we saw that with social media companies, et cetera. Look, I mean, it's going to be a very interesting year and a half ahead. And we look forward to talking to you some more about it. Andy Puster, it's so good to see you, my friend. And I want to encourage everybody to check out, you get an article on National Review that gets into all of this and the inflation numbers and CPI and PPI and all this stuff that I'm telling you, it is so critical that people pay attention to this, because if we don't, they will steal our future. I really feel that it's being stolen right from under. This inflation is a big deal. This whole wokeism is ruining the American economy and our competitiveness, and we need to take it seriously. So thank you, Andy.
Thanks, Tricia. It's a pleasure to be here. Great show.
So good. And everybody loves Carl's Jr. and Hardee's. They love you. They thank you for being here. I'm going to chat with some of the viewers for a little bit. My thanks again to Andy Puster, my friend.
Thanks,
anyway,
Trish.
We got a lot going on here today, as I said. I mean, I'm like, I go on vacation and there's cocaine in the White House. Let me just tell you, guys, I've been in the White House many, many, many times. Oh, we still got Andy with us. I got to turn off his microphone. There we go. I have been in the White House many times. I have been there to interview officials and the president, and the security is like serious, right? Like, it's like major, major security. You're not getting anything through there. I don't know how that happened. Like, I really don't know how that happened. And now there's been a bunch of different stories. Who knows? I don't care whose it is, right? All right, let's just start with that. I want to know what kind of security they got going on where this stuff can actually get in there. So that's, of course, been a big, wild, wild story. We're continuing to hear some pretty seedy things about what may or may not have gone down with the Biden family and, you know, the pay-to-play scandal, which is a big deal. It's a big deal. And yet the left wants to totally bury this. And they're like, how dare you pick on Biden's son? Well, I'm sorry. Like, the guy's out there at the India state dinner the very next night after having a plea deal where he kind of gets off the hook for just, you know, some minor tax evasion. It is a big deal. He shouldn't be showing up at the state dinner, for goodness sakes, the very next night if you don't want us to talk about it. I mean, look, the American people deserve better than that. And then the latest, if you've seen, is Chuck Todd and others, is the MSNBC guy with the weird little beard. Anyway, he's like, oh, you know, don't go after Biden for not acknowledging the seventh grandchild. And people are like, it's not fair. There was a woman on The View that's saying it's not right. You know, that somehow it's the woman and the grandchild's fault because they're trying to force their way into the Biden family. I'm sorry, the kid is a Biden. You know, like, there's a DNA test. That feels really, really wrong. I mean, like, that's just another character issue that I think is coming up. In terms of Hunter, we can all write him off, right? We know that his character is most definitely flawed. But in terms of the father, as president of the United States, you know what? Man up. Man up. It's your grandchild. Don't try and pretend otherwise. That's my two cents on it. And gosh darn it, you know, when it comes to women, this gets me because I don't know why women aren't doing more to defend other women. It becomes so political. On The View, somehow now, it's the woman, the mother of the child that was born out of wedlock to Hunter Biden. Somehow the mother is at fault for trying to secure a future for her own daughter. I mean, this is terrible. This is just terrible. You know, character's really, really lacking because it's all come down to whether you're left or right. And the truth is, we're all human beings and we all ought to be looking out for each other. And Joe Biden, there is no excuse for not acknowledging your grandchild. We've been talking a lot about inflation, of course, on today's program. You've been listening to Andy Puzder, who is the former CEO of Carl's Jr. and Hardee's. And I just wanted to give a quick shout out for our friends over at Legacy Precious Metals, one of the sponsors of this show, LegacyPMInvestments.com. Charles Thorngren was just on the program, the CEO, the other day, and talking about sort of the long-term systemic challenges that we face because they just keep spending money and there's no will to change that. And that affects all of us from an inflationary standpoint. And he said something really interesting, that even if the Fed raises rates, it doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to get any of this under control. One, you know, you've got that $32 trillion in debt and still counting. And you also have a situation where so many banks have treasuries. They have to, right? Like, you have to invest in treasuries if you're a bank in your portfolio. And because rates were so long at record lows, now that they've been resetting to higher levels, when the Fed ups rates, they're going to reset again, these banks are left with all that stuff and they have to mark to market. So his concern is just additional financial systemic style problems. And so those are real things to be thinking about. But anyway, we want to thank our friends over there. If you're interested in investing in gold, go over to LegacyPMInvestments.com or call them 1-866-589-0560. You're welcome to use my name. They are very good friends of mine and wonderful sales team. They're not too pushy. So they can kind of guide you through some of the intricacies of investing in gold. But again, we started the show looking at this. This is the Grunt commercial. This is the new Grunt commercial that is being featured by Bud Light. And there's a famous NFL player in this thing. And somehow the thinking is that this is going to relate to men. They just sit around and grunt and they drink a Bud Light. And that's going to fix everything. Look, there's no fixing it. I think Andy was right. The only way this company really survives is to just clean house, completely change management, and call it a day. I think you're going to have to rebrand that beer. I don't know if Bud Light can really go by Bud Light anymore. And I think the rest of the brands are going to suffer as well. As you know, Modelo has climbed to the number one spot. Bud Light, last I checked, it was like 15. So that's a big hit. Just saying, that's a big hit. And I don't think anybody's going to get over this quite so easily. Michael Donald talking about, you know, 10% to the big guy. Those are questions that still need to be answered. And Leslie is not a fan of the grunt. One of you, Sam, is saying it's kind of like an Ex-Lax commercial. Oh my goodness gracious. Anyway, so great to have you all here. If you have not, please do me the favor of subscribing. Subscribe to this channel. If you're watching on YouTube or if you're watching on Facebook, we're here. I'm back from vacation. So we're going to be doing the show live again, of course. And I love having you here. So subscribe so you get the notification. If you want to be really extra clever, you can go to TrishReganShow.com. TrishReganShow.com. See, I will put it right here. Here we go. In the show notes, the link. Well, I'll put it in the show notes, but I'm actually, as we speak, putting it into the chat with you. So that is my website, which is, forgive it, it's being worked on right now as we speak, but you can sign up for my email there and you can stay in touch and find out about updates and things like that. But make sure you subscribe, hit the like button, make a comment, that all helps below. And hey, congrats guys. Like, listen, it is really and truly thanks to you that we are now at 80,000 subs and still counting. So something certainly to be proud about. I thank you again, and I'll see you right back here tomorrow.